The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
The irony is that most of the stores that were destroyed during the riots were owned by black people.
That's stupid, though. I mean, why trash your own neighborhood?
Well, that's my point. It's an irrational act. It's like an expression of rage by people who feel neglected and turned away by the system.
Exactly. I mean, it's like we had in Watts or the riots in Chicago in 68.
That's crap. I don't buy that for a minute. Calling a riot an irrational expression of rage, that's such a cop-out. It's opportunism at its worst. It's a bunch of people grabbing any excuse they can find to go and loot a store. Nothing more. You know, the fact that these people ripped off the stores in their own communities, all that reflects is the degree to which these people have absolutely no respect for the law at all, and certainly no concept of, like, community or civic responsibility.
Wait a minute. White people commit crimes against white people, too.
Yeah, but they're not offing each other in record numbers all over America. Look at the statistics, for Christ's sakes. It's one in every three black males is in some phase of the correctional system. Is that a coincidence, or do these people have, you know, like a racial commitment to crime?
Not only that, they're proud of it.
Well, maybe it says something about prejudice in the judicial system.
Yeah, if you want to talk about criminal statistics, you might want to take a look at the social inequalities that produce them.
Yap. You know what? That's exactly what I hate. Because what you're doing, Davina, is taking one thing and calling it something else and just, you know, alleviating the responsibility that these people have for their own actions. You know, it's like saying, it's not a riot, it's rage. It's not crime, it's poverty. That's just nonsense.
Welcome, everyone. It is Wednesday, November 26, 2025. I'm Bob Metz, and this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's Just Right.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
When it comes to discussing politics, it's remarkable how divided many people find themselves from each other, even when they've been longtime friends, family members, or supporters of the same political party or movement. And you know, they say that politics makes for strange bedfellows, but what they rarely ever say is that politics also makes for divisions between kindred bedfellows, and never have we been seeing it more recently than between people who identify with the right and who are all bickering with one another and on a personal character level. It's been called the fragmentation of the right, and it concerns various personalities on the right, like Tucker Carlson, Mark Levin, Candace Owens, Ben Shapiro, Nick Fuentes, among many others. And for me personally, I'd rather not get involved with this at all. Unfortunately, on the political front, with all the infighting going on between those we otherwise might consider allies, it's becoming harder and harder to avoid having to address this phenomenon. Disagreements and arguments are a natural matter of discourse among people who share a common goal or objective. But too many people are of the opinion that such disagreement is a sign that the goal or objective originally embarked upon is ultimately doomed. Personally, I think it could go either way. And issues like the ones raised in our opener, from racism to lawlessness, are among those found at the center of concerns that will be discussed later in our show today. So let the bickering begin, right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org, hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave, follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform, and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible. Let me say from the outset that all of this right-wing internal bickering and infighting is something that I've been dealing with since day one of my own personal involvement in politics. From a freedom perspective, Robert Vaughn and I have long argued that conservatives are among freedom's worst enemies. And this isn't because they're opposed to freedom as such, but because they say they are in favor of individual freedom, yet can never get their acts together towards that end. And as a result, Western society keeps drifting towards the left, and the failure to recognize that left and right are political polarities and not part of a political spectrum has a lot to do with the smaller false polarities arising within the right wing. And that's just one of the key reasons we begin every show with identifying ourselves as not right-wing, but just right. Now, just before preparing for the show, Robert Vaughn sent me a June 19 X post by Hodge Twins that had received 939,000 views at the time it was forwarded to me. And it read as follows, quote, "There is a clear divide on the right on X right now. Pro-war neocons, Fox News hosts like Hannity and Levin, and Republicans like Graham, Cruz, etc. Anti-war conservatives, Alex Jones, Tucker, Bannon, Posobiec, etc. Bootlickers, Cat Turd and Loomer, etc. Each group has their own audience of followers behind them. The neocons are straight garbage and can't be reasoned with. The other groups agree on almost everything, except the bootlickers are scared to death of saying anything that might question Israel or Trump. We need the anti-war conservatives and the bootlickers to come together against the neocons and shut down any talk of war to show President Trump how his base feels," end quote. Well, that's one way of describing the quote-unquote divide. But there certainly wasn't anything clear about it. In fact, there were so many labels and names tossed into that divide that the only actual divide being discussed pertained to a single issue: America's role in foreign wars. But this isn't an issue that can be discussed in clear terms of left and right, because the issue of war has been both supported and opposed by both sides, and war per se is not even an issue. If someone attacks you, you're at war whether you approve of it or not. And after that, welcome to the fog of war, a fog that has now blinded many to who and what the real enemy of freedom is. There's an old saying expressed in various different ways, which essentially argues that great minds discuss ideas, average minds discuss events, small minds discuss people. More and more, I'm being led to believe that too many people who identify with the right fall into the third category. And for my part, I'm not really a good people person in this respect, because it's primarily their ideas that may or may not interest me, and as a result, I feel quite comfortable in saying that we've featured the voices of just about all of these hostile to each other right-wingers at some time in the past, and have found ourselves both in agreement with and in disagreement with many of the same personalities. And I see no reason to not continue to do so in the future. So to kick off all of the right-wing bickering, on this side of our upcoming bumper, Redacted's Clayton Morris on his November 5th show argues that Tucker Carlson destroyed Ben Shapiro, while on the return side of the bumper, Chris Keene and Jimmy Dore on the latter's November 17 show added their observations to the same debate.
So a few years ago, Ben Shapiro wouldn't even say Nick Fuentes' name. He would talk around his name, but he can't avoid it now because conservatives like Nick and Tucker, who are America First, are now winning. So he has to use their names now, Ben Shapiro does. Shapiro finally addresses it, taking on Nick and Tucker by name. Spent a whole show doing it, saying that he will not allow the conservative movement to fall into their hands. He devoted the whole show to talking down to America First conservatives like he's some kind of conservative gatekeeper. Watch.
No to the Groypers. No to their publicists like Tucker Carlson. No to those who champion them. No to demoralization. No to bigotry and anti-meritocratic horse shit. No to anti-Americanism. No. This is our country. This is our party. And this is our conservative movement. And I will not stand by while it is handed over to those who betray the most fundamental principles I have spent my entire life defending and advocating. That is a path to defeat and a path to moral oblivion. I reject it, because if we lose the right, we will lose to the left. And either way, we'll lose the country.
So this is our America This is, who is our, by the way? Like, who are these people that you're saying the country belongs to me? Like, who is this our? Who's this collective our that you're talking about? What do you mean by that exactly? Sorry, pal, a little too late. And what's hilarious, as Nick pointed out, Shapiro did this whole show with no ads, meaning he knows how seriously the Daily Wire is in trouble here. He did the whole show, no ads, just to do this particular segment. Listen to Nick.
But today, it was a clip show. Today, it was like a full-fledged Fuentes Updates clip show. It was like America's Funniest Videos, one clip after the 40 minutes, no ads. That's how you know they mean business. 40-minute video, and about 50% of it was just my clips. Fuentes says, Fuentes that, he's a Nazi, sexist, Holocaust denier. Whoa, you're sounding like, you're giving me like Bill Maher, Rachel Maddow. What is this? I thought Shapiro was against SJWs. Now he sounds like one of them.
People like Ben Shapiro and Josh Hammer and Ted Cruz, you know, all these people, like, they think in terms of groups. And that's what Levin said to me. It's like, my group, people are hurting my group. And it's like, if your group means your family, you know, people you love, I get it. But if you're thinking purely in terms of your ethnic group, which is what he is saying, then you inevitably become very hateful toward other ethnic groups, actually. Yeah. You know, people like Seth Dillon or Ben Shapiro. The truth is, they are openly pro-violence. So how in the world could you justify killing tens of thousands of children or justify a pager attack, which is an act of terrorism, where you indiscriminately blowing people's genitals off? You don't know who's holding the pager, and you're celebrating it. What are you celebrating? You're celebrating violence. And they celebrate violence day after day. That's where their foreign policy comes from. That's where their worldview is. Strangling the neck of a Jew, who even thinks that way? Someone who's thinking very often in violent terms, and so and hateful terms. That's hate. And so people like that, when aroused to hysteria, and I feel sorry for them, and I just want to say that again. Lindsey Graham, another violence worshiper, like, the idea that they're promoting violence, well, they've been promoting violence for decades. Because this whole project is about violence. It's about the thrill that they feel killing their enemies, the godlike power they imagine they have when they extinguish human life. That's the whole game for them. And we shouldn't, like, so, oh, you're not promoting violence? Oh, you're definitely promoting violence. And that's why I oppose you.
So way to go, Tucker, and way to go, Nick. By the way, Dave Smith posted this after the interview. He said, so all of the worst people in the country gathered together to attack the great Tucker Carlson. I'll be doing a show about it tomorrow. It's going to be a big one. But for now, I'll just say this. You will cancel Tucker Carlson over all of our dead effing bodies. You war-thirsty scumbags have ruined everything for 25 years at least, and you will never kill the awakening of the American people, which is way overdue. I challenge all of you to debate this topic. I mean, all of you. Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, Randy Fine, Mark Levin, whoever else you want to bring against little old non-expert me. I'll wreck all of you. But unfortunately, we all know that you're all too much of a pussy to accept. Not a single one of you are man enough to defend your ideas. Dave Smith. Americans are sick and tired of being insulted with you, and it's over.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Jimmy Dore Show. I am your guest host, Chris Keene. I'm here with Jimmy Dore. We've been talking about Tucker Carlson and Ben Shapiro a lot today. They're in a feud right now, largely over Tucker's decision to interview Nick Fuentes. We'll get into that.
The fragmentation of the political right. That fragmentation is being caused purposefully by a splinter faction of people led by a young man named Nick Fuentes. They call themselves the Groypers. They are white supremacists. They hate women, Jews, Hindus, many types of Christians, brown people of a wide variety of backgrounds, blacks, America's foreign policy, and America's constitution. They admire Hitler and Stalin. And that splinter faction is now being facilitated and normalized within the mainstream Republican Party. The main agent in that normalization is Tucker Carlson, who is an intellectual coward, a dishonest interlocutor, and a terrible friend. And Tucker Carlson last week
was aided, abetted, celebrated for normalizing Nazism within the Republican Party.
He has said normalize three times so far. Let's see if he says it again. This is this is woke language. Don't normalize that. Just by talking to someone, you're normalizing it, apparently.
By the mainstay organization of the traditional right, the Heritage Foundation. Now, before we explain what's been happening, let's make one thing clear. This is not about free speech or cancellation. It was never about free speech or cancellation. The issue here isn't that Tucker Carlson had Nick Fuentes on his show last week. He has every right to do that, of course. The issue here is that Tucker Carlson decided to normalize and fluff Nick Fuentes. And
there it is again. We're normalizing. Just by talking to someone, you're normalizing it. You can't have a conversation with someone. I understand the critique that you should, if you interview someone like Nick Fuentes, you should push back. You should criticize his beliefs or at least question him on them. But this idea that you're normalizing someone just by having a conversation. Nick Fuentes is more popular than ever. They've tried to shut him up and cancel him. It doesn't work. That never works. Anytime you try to cancel something or get rid of it, it just makes it people want to listen to it more. Banning things does not get rid of them. The way you fight someone like Nick Fuentes, if you don't like his ideas, you fight bad ideas with good ideas. This is a point that Ben Shapiro has made. Yeah, he used to make that all the time. That was his whole thing, is like, we should be able to debate. We should fight good bad ideas with good ideas. We should not cancel people or deplatform them or say, don't talk to that person. I mean, people used to say this about Ben Shapiro. Don't platform Ben Shapiro. Don't even talk to Ben Shapiro. Otherwise, you're a racist and you're platforming dangerous ideas just by having a conversation with Ben Shapiro. It used to be normal for journalists to interview people, to get their take.
I remember when Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes interviewed Ayatollah Khomeini as they were holding Americans hostage.
Yes. Yeah. Apparently he agrees with that guy.
People used to interview Charlie Manson all the time.
Yes.
That was a big get. You get to interview Charlie Manson. What the hell?
Right. That doesn't mean that you're a murderer.
That's right.
Just because you talked to Charles Manson.
I think anytime you interview someone, that means that you agree with everything they say. Okay.
It's so ridiculous. That's the crazy thing. People seem to get more upset by what people say these days than what people do. I don't understand that. I find the stuff, a lot of stuff Nick Fuentes says, to be disgusting. But in my opinion, even someone like George W. Bush, for instance, is way more of a sickening person than Nick Fuentes. He's responsible for millions of deaths.
Yeah. You don't remember when Nick Fuentes invaded a foreign country and killed a million people and then ran a torture program? And then imprisoned the people who revealed that torture program?
Of course.
Huh.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I don't think the point of Tucker's interview was to be this super, let me get this guy. He was trying to understand this person more. So take from that what you will. Some people look at that as you're endorsing their ideas. So Shapiro then responds to this.
What I saw Tucker do was not whitewash his ideas, but try to put bumpers up on the guy. I know Tucker well, and I think that was his approach. Yeah. And the way, if you want to put a bumper up on Nick Fuentes, is it helpful to say, you're fucking vile, you're an anti-Semite?
Yes.
No, it isn't. That makes the audience feel good because you have hand-to-hand combat, but it doesn't help change that guy's
conversation
view or his extremity.
Exactly. So yes, you can say that. It's tell him he's vile, do that. That doesn't change people's minds. What changed people's minds is, like Ben Shapiro has said his whole career, you fight bad ideas with good ideas. You talk to people, you have conversations, even the most vile people, they're still a human being. Talk to them, and maybe you'll change their mind. But name calling and ostracizing people, silencing them, that does not change anyone's mind. It just makes it worse.
When you say to somebody in an interview, do you condemn anti-Semitism? And then the person says, sure, which is what Nick Fuentes said. He said, I'm not an anti-Semite, which is blatantly untrue.
Yeah.
A responsible journalist would then follow up, demonstrating that that is false. Tucker did not do that. He allowed him to get away with that. And then he allowed him to talk about quote-unquote organized jury, followed by Nick Fuentes being treated to a disquisition by Tucker Carlson about why Christian Zionists, of all human beings on earth, are the people that he hates the most.
He took that back.
You can't take that back. How do you take that back?
That's crazy, especially for someone like Ben Shapiro to say, because he, in his past, has said terrible things about Arabs, for instance. And he took that back. He had a whole page on his website saying, here's all the dumb things I've said throughout my career, and I take them back. I apologize. So this idea that you can't say something wrong once and then change your mind doesn't make any sense.
Well, you've got to admit, it's all a bit entertaining on one level, isn't it? I have my own criticisms about Tucker Carlson, but calling him an intellectual coward, a dishonest interlocutor, and a terrible friend are not in the categories of judgments that are relevant to defining those on the right. That said, I have never seen Carlson run from a one-on-one debate, and if he is a quote-unquote coward in the intellectual sense, I'm not sure what that means. Is he afraid to make an intellectual argument? I know he always gives it a try, and sometimes he falls back on his religious beliefs, but that's a different issue entirely. And I have to admit that I've heard Tucker express unbelievably outrageous ideas, as he did recently on one of his own shows, where he expressed his open opposition to all science and technology. Completely irrational. I'm still in shock over that statement, as was his guest at the time, and if I should ever revisit that event, it would be in the context of discussing the value of science and technology, and not the irrationality of someone who says he's opposed to those based on his belief in Christianity. I will defend the principles I've spent my entire life advocating, says Ben Shapiro. But to which principles is he referring? Conservative principles? This is our conservative movement, says Shapiro, but I wonder how can he distinguish his conservative movement from that of other conservative movements? That's something I'd like to see explained. I mean, there's Christian conservatives, economic conservatives, social conservatives, religious conservatives, libertarian conservatives. Conservatives come in many flavors and varieties, all distinguished from each other by the adjectives describing them, or simply by turning the word conservative itself into an adjective, as with the term conservative libertarians. And nothing is worse than Ontario's official political party named the Progressive Conservative Party, for heaven's sakes. Says Ben Shapiro, if we lose to the right, we will lose to the left, and either way, we will lose the country. Well, this statement phrased as, quote, end quote, if we lose to the right or left, suggests that the we Shapiro is talking about is neither the we on the right or the we on the left. Obviously, the we Shapiro is talking about is the we who agrees with him. Well, you know, Ben Shapiro cites what he calls a splinter faction led by Nick Fuentes. They call themselves the Groypers. They're white supremacists. They hate women, Jews, Christians, brown people, blacks, America's foreign policy and constitution, and they admire Hitler and Stalin. Now, what is wrong with that accusation? I mean, besides it being false, as we'll learn later. Well, I'll give you a hint. There are two terms in that list of vindictives that are completely inconsistent with the rest. And what's significant about those two terms is that they identify the very issues that Tucker Carlson correctly himself has identified as the ones being avoided, namely America's foreign policy and constitution. That is the discussion that Tucker says everyone is avoiding when they use the tactics of distraction, as we'll hear himself say shortly. So, when you mix those issues into a sentence that is otherwise totally racist and filled with hate, it becomes very psychologically uncomfortable to focus strictly on the foreign policy issue without being labeled an anti-Semite or any of the other groups you supposedly hate. You see the strategy? Calling people vile doesn't change people's minds. You fight bad ideas with good ideas, said Chris Keene to Jimmy Dore. And while I generally can agree with that statement, it tends to obscure a very critical truth that is necessary to be aware of when in the political arena. It has been my long-time personal experience that fighting bad ideas with good ideas also doesn't change people's minds, especially in the short term, and especially when those operating on the bad ideas remain committed to them. People change their own minds. and often due to reasons far removed from a particular idea itself, but more based on their own personal experiences. However, and this is important, both calling people vile and fighting bad ideas with good ideas do serve a positive function. They attract like-minded people to your cause or to your objective. I always made it clear to any Freedom Party candidates or supporters that our goal was not to convert supporters of other parties to our own, but to garner the support of those who already agree with the party's principles and objectives. The rest takes care of itself. And finally, Tucker said that people like Ben Shapiro think in terms of groups. They are openly for violence. How can you justify killing thousands of children and blowing up pagers? This whole project is about violence, he says. Well, this is actually Tucker Carlson's project, and it seems to me that he's a bit obsessed with violence as some kind of evil floating abstraction, about which we'll be hearing him say a lot more in this coming audio selection from his own November 12th podcast.
Pretty much every morning you wake up and open your phone and think to yourself, I wonder if this roiling fight on the right is still ongoing, the fight over who's a Nazi and who's Nazi adjacent and who should be platformed and who should be deplatformed. That fight, the one that has mesmerized X users across the world. What is that fight actually about and how long will it continue? Well, the first thing to know about it is that it didn't start 3 weeks ago with Nick Fuentes' appearance on a podcast. And so that debate began, and it mostly began behind the scenes. It didn't sort of peek out into public view very often, but when it did, the people who wanted the regime change war against Iran, almost, with almost zero exceptions, almost never admitted what they actually wanted, and they certainly never acknowledged what the debate was actually about. Almost from the beginning, the people who wanted regime change war with Iran made the debate instead about, why do you hate the Jews? You're a Nazi. And of course, that was never what the debate was about. And so very few people pushed back, very few. In fact, as far as I know, only two people, me and Charlie Kirk, actually went and spoke directly to the president to make the case that no, you shouldn't get involved in this war because its aim is not actually to deny Iran a nuclear weapon. That may be a virtuous goal, but that's not really what this is about. What this is about is luring the United States into yet another regime change war. And if you do that, it's bad for everybody, including you. That's the case that we made. How did we fall for another moral panic, another social media driven moral panic? How did everyone go insane all at once, denouncing each other and denouncing old friends and beclowning themselves because they're caught up in this moment and they can't see that they're betraying the very principles they claimed like 6 months ago they would give their lives for? And those people are going to feel shame, and many of us will feel contempt for them more than we already do. So that's going to happen. They can't win this debate. It's not actually a debate. It's them name-calling. So that's going to happen, rest assured. But in the meantime, the rest of us have to listen to an awful lot of a man who a year ago was unknown to most Americans, kind of a third-tier podcaster, TV host, or radio host, or whatever, a guy who was a weekend show on a cable channel, a guy called Mark Levin. And for the last month, we've been watching Mark Levin say things that no one in my lifetime has ever said from the right, like this. Watch.
I don't know whether it's Jew hatred from the Marxists, the Islamists, the neo-Nazis, the grifters. I don't know where they're pulling us and pushing us. What do they want to do with American Jews? What do they want to do? Where are they taking this country? They're destroying it. Carlson, Owens, Kelly, Bannon. It is a time for choosing. You pick the good guys or the bad guys. You pit America or you pit the Third Reich. They're not MAGA. They're not conservative. In fact, they're more Marxist, Islamist, America-hating, Jew-hating thugs than anything else. And let me educate them briefly. The Babylonians couldn't kill the Jews. The Persians couldn't kill the Jews. The Romans couldn't kill the Jews. Hitler couldn't kill the Jews, and by this I mean eliminate them. You think your puny little asses are going to be able to do it?
Kill the Jews? Your first thought is, wait a second, how do we get to that? No, just don't want a regime change war against Rwanda. By the way, a war in which Jews would die, presumably, both in the U.S. military and the IDF. Like, no, don't want to kill anybody. Actually, that's kind of the point. And all of a sudden it becomes the Babylonians, the Nazis trying to kill the Jews. So he's accusing his opponents of really what he wants, as always. The second thing you notice is how totally personal this is. You're members of the Third Reich. You're Nazis. You're evil. You're an Islamist. You hate Jews. You're an anti-Semite. You hate America. Okay. That's ad hominem. There's no even attempt to address the argument that anyone Mark Levin doesn't agree with is making. Instead, it's just attacking them as people. And the third thing you notice is what animates this, which is hate. Mark Levin is filled with hate, obviously. And hate is one of those words that is thrown around a lot as a weapon. You're filled with hate. That's hate. It's hate speech. Therefore, you can't say it, etc. But that doesn't mean, just because the word itself is used cynically, that the term doesn't describe anything or that hate isn't real. Hate is absolutely real. Hate is absolutely real. And if you listen to enough Mark Levin, you yourself can become hateful. Reacting against it can turn you into what he claims you are. And that's just a fact of human nature. You stick your face right up against this. After a while, you will become hateful. All of us, even people who are committed to not being hateful. And that kind of is the trap here. Mark Levin is almost 70 years old. You know, I mean, no one's going to eat the dog food here, okay? That is not a message anyone's going to buy. So the fear is not that Mark Levin will take over American politics. That's not going to happen. The fear is that we become Mark Levin. By staring at Mark Levin too much, we become him.
And I'm supposed to, what, shed crocodile tears for what's going to happen to these people? I'm not. Maybe I'm the only one who will voice it, but I'm not. Israel has every right to throw every damn thing it has at barbarians. And if there are innocent people, quote-unquote civilians, who are killed, then maybe they ought to organize to take out the government they elected. Tapper and the others are saying there's 2 million Palestinians in Gaza. They're not all terrorists. They don't all believe in Hamas. They really have no choice. Let me ask you a question. Is that how we treated the German people when we were fighting the Third Reich? Well, they're not all Nazis. I mean, you got to fight to win and survive. You can't sit there and figure all that stuff out. Oh, but don't hurt the civilians. Look, we have to defend ourselves. The free world has to defend itself. And if there's collateral damage, well, that's too bad.
The idea of blood guilt, because that's what he's describing there. You should be killed by virtue of who your parents are, who your grandparents were, by virtue of how you were born. You should be killed. You don't have a right to live. You're guilty because you were born. This is genocide right there, that attitude. That was considered totally un-Christian and un-American because it is. And if someone said something like that on television, I mean, he'd be probably pulled off the air for that. You should kill kids because you don't like their parents? And then you wake up and there's Mark Levin, and not just Mark Levin, but our policymakers, our members of Congress. Most of them are not Jewish, by the way. This like infected everybody. That's okay. It's not okay. It'll never be okay. You can't fight people unless you think you're morally superior to them. And how can you say you're morally superior if you're operating from the same assumption, which is that everyone on the other side should be killed because of how they were born? So here's Mark Levin about 2 weeks, in fact, I think exactly 2 weeks after Charlie Kirk was assassinated. And he was trying to explain how this happened. How did Charlie get killed? Here's what he said.
The call to violence. That's what it is. You're calling people Hitler. It's a mass murder. You're treating ICE like it's the Gestapo or the SS. Then you're free to shoot them.
There you go. You call people Hitler, they get killed. So once you call people that, you liken them to the person we collectively agree is the worst person ever, then why wouldn't you kill the people who are Hitler in your own society? Well, you probably wouldn't. You'd feel justified in doing it. And that was the point he was making. And as Mark Levin just said, they lead to violence. Calling people Hitler leads to violence. Wow. Well, since that's his description and his terms, consider this clip about a month later.
I would ask some of these people who say, look, I'm going to stand by Tucker. You know, he's just inquisitive. He likes to have these people on and ask them questions. Really? But I'm not going to platform them, no. So Tucker is a racist. Is that okay? First of all, how many of you have friends who are racists? Isn't that a fair question, Mr. Producer? How many of you have friends who are racists and are proud of it and talk about it on a national platform? This is what I get now. Will you debate him? Will you debate Tucker Carlson? I don't debate the Klan. I don't debate Nazis.
I don't debate Nazis. He texted me that. And it's interesting because people like Levin and Ben Shapiro, who at one point had this like media empire propped up by Facebook, the Daily Wire, with some good people on it. You know, it's fine. It's fine. But Ben Shapiro spent, I don't know, a decade posing as someone who actually cared about your concerns as an American. He did it imperfectly. There were flashes that he didn't really care. But he's like, no, I'm a conservative. I'm a conservative. I'm not just interested in the fortunes of one tiny country in the Middle East with a population of 9 million. No, I have a lot of interest. I really care about this country and I'm against the trans movement or whatever. So this is a very revealing exchange that took place on stage with Megyn Kelly. Ben Shapiro was just sitting there being interviewed by Megyn Kelly and said something. He said something like, well, Tucker Carlson's, you know, for Maduro, the communist leader of Venezuela, who I guess were on the way to killing or something, forcing out, regime changing him. And he defended Maduro. Didn't, actually. And Megyn Kelly says, well, Tucker said in his show that Maduro, most people didn't know this, whatever his many faults, I wouldn't hire him as an economist, okay? But whatever his many faults, has the most socially conservative country probably in the hemisphere. So Venezuela is just a fact. I mean, I didn't make this up. I'm not in charge of Venezuela. Just noticing that Venezuela has banned pornography, banned abortion, banned gay marriage, banned sex changes, and banned usury. Okay. Ben Shapiro responded this way.
Tucker's made the point, I'm not going to here to be Tucker's defender, but he's made the point that Maduro is culturally conservative.
Who gives a sh**? The guy's a communist dictator. Everyone in his country is eating dog. He's shipping fentanyl to the United States to kill Americans. Why do I give a sh**? Whether he's anti-LGBTQ rights.
Who gives a sh**?
I do. Like, first of all, I'm against abortion. Sorry. Unpopular. I feel that way. I don't think pornography is good. That really hurts people. That your economic condition is not the only measure of health. Your spiritual condition matters too. It's just a fact. It does. So if you say, well, Maduro, whatever his many faults, probably stole the election. Looks that way to me. I don't know, but it looks that way. People say he's bad. I'm okay. I believe you. He's bad. But he doesn't have that. And that's a good thing. And Ben Shapiro's like, I don't give a shit. Shut up. He's a communist. It makes you wonder how we're defining communist here. Because, of course, in the United States, communist no longer means someone who believes Marx and Engels. It has nothing to do with academic theory. That's all gone. Communist in the United States is a synonym for someone who seeks to rot a society from within and destroy it. And I guess I would argue that if you don't give a shit about pornography or 63 million abortions in the United States and the since Roe v. Wade or whatever, and if you don't care about 600% annual interest rates on payday loans being given to the poor, who's the communist exactly?
Well, the communist is the guy who believes in abolishing private property. And you are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online. And for Tucker to say that in the U.S., communist is someone who seeks to rot society from within and has nothing to do with Marx and Engels is to express complete ignorance about the fact that rotting society from within is a key element of the Marx and Engels playbook. It's just that most people are not aware of how these ideas affect them and play out in their daily lives. That is why we stressed the necessity, during last week's broadcast, of defining the fundamentals of both socialism and capitalism so as to make them identifiable to a greater number of people. Unexpectedly, the more I heard from Tucker Carlson during that last audio selection, the weaker his arguments seemed to get to me. To accuse Mark Levin of blood guilt in the context of what we just heard Levin say was a gross misrepresentation of his argument. Levin was talking about the conditions of war in which two or more sides are actively engaged in physically wiping out the other sides. Whether Levin was correct or not in his description of the Israel-Gaza conflict is an entirely different debate, but if correct, then his argument's consistent with his belief that it is so. Levin is not calling for the murder of children based on their bloodlines. But I'm on Tucker's side regarding Levin's rant on the Jews and Jewish history, to say nothing of his refusal to debate with Tucker Carlson. Tucker is a racist, so no, I don't debate the Klan, and I don't debate Nazis. Wow, they're all one really big happy family over there on the right wing, aren't they? Then there's Tucker's criticism of Ben Shapiro, who quite justifiably, I think, criticized Venezuela's Maduro of being a communist. But because Maduro's government has a socially conservative domestic policy, which includes censorship among other things, Tucker downplays the communism as being secondary to his social conservatism priority, which itself is a form of socialism. Tucker even acknowledged that Maduro stole the election, but hey, Venezuela's doing all the things that suit Tucker's political agenda. You know, Tucker's projecting his values onto Shapiro's values, values which reject communism outright. But these are two separate debates, they're separate issues, and they need not necessarily be in conflict or agreement with one another. And finally, I earlier mentioned that Tucker is a bit obsessed with violence as some kind of evil floating abstraction. And by that I mean that he speaks about violence and war in a complete vacuum, as if these are things that one can be for or against. Nobody I know is pro-violence or pro-war for their own sake. But if country A is being physically attacked by country B, being against war and violence in country A would be an act of suicide. Violence is a consequence of conflict. It is totally justified in an act of self-defense and totally unjustified as an act of aggression. Just talking about violence in a vacuum is evading the moral issues underlying the conflict, and that's what these people are all trying to avoid. But interestingly, not everyone thinks like Ben Shapiro about Nick Fuentes, and in our following audio selection, we'll hear podcaster Amir Adam reacting to some of Nick Fuentes' most viral clips on his own November 13 show. We first featured the comments of Amir during our August 6 show about Sydney Sweeney and her great genes, when he made the point of self-identifying as a gay black man who also could appreciate that Sydney Sweeney was hot. And given that self-identification, you might be quite surprised by his reactions to Nick Fuentes' fairly racist commentaries.
Anyone that has any genuine racial hatred, we have to just say there's something wrong with you.
I'm a young man. My country has been stolen from me.
No, it's not the Jews. No, it's not women. No, it's not blacks. It's actually really complicated. No, it isn't at all. Jews are running society. Women need to shut the up. Blacks need to be imprisoned for the most part.
and we would live in paradise.
In this video, we're going to be reacting to Nick Fuentes' clips, and not in a gotcha kind of way, but in a genuine, just trying to understand the things he says, why people find him to be absolutely hilarious, the top clips that I've seen, clips that I honestly agree with, and some things to just provide more context to what he talks about and the man that he is. We're having a large group of people like this person, like Nick Fuentes, and then another large group of people saying, don't listen to that, don't listen to that. No, we finna listen to that. We are. We're gonna be reacting to some clips, ones that I love, some that I've never seen, and we're just going to give some real commentary to it all.
All I'm saying is minorities are really obnoxious and they should just behave. Hispanics, speak English. Muslims, too loud with the Muslim call to prayer. Black people, speakerphone is not the default option. Put it to your head. Indoor voices.
Dude, this is why people, like, this is why, and a lot of these memes are intros to Nick as of lately, why so many young Gen Z people just gravitate towards this man and, like, they find this funny. Like, this is an actual funny reel. And if you've seen Instagram reels, you know how dark it can get. You know how crazy and decrepit it can get. This is funny. It's funny and it's real. It's true.
And I will tell you this as plainly as possible. I don't want to live around black people. I just don't. It would be irresponsible if I had a wife and kids to live near black people. It just would be.
Hear me out. Because what I'm about to say is that he's right. I mean, it's just, it's a meme, but it's like low-key real. It's why a lot of people move away from the hood and like they move away from all that and they want to go in like a nice neighborhood that has less black people, because in large part, a lot of black people just don't know how to act and it's not a pleasant experience. And before someone out there watching this video, oh my gosh, that's so racist. I mean, why would you say that? I've seen so many reels and so many jokes and TikToks of other black creators like saying the same thing, because it's real. It's recognized even within the black community. It's a real thing, not wanting to necessarily live near black people, because we know how the culture acts and we know how it is and we know what goes down. And I know so many friends and family members who have experienced this, who've been in a nice neighborhood, then they get black neighbors and it's just the stereotypical black neighbors and it just doesn't work out. And it's real. It's just, it's relatable.
To say that every black person is violent, it's not to say that every black person is the same way.
Thank you.
But we watch the news, we read the papers. When you drive downtown in Chicago, you know who you got to look out for and worry about when you're thinking about whether you're going to get carjacked, when you're worried about catching a stray bullet, when you're worried about who's going to pull up on the side of the road and literally shove a rifle in your face and steal your iPhone or shoot you point blank. Execution style in Lincoln Park. We know who's doing it.
We know.
I don't want to live near them. I don't want to be near them. They make me nervous.
What are you supposed to say to that? Because you really can't refute anything that he said. All the most dangerous things that happened in Chicago happened at the hands of other black people. So on one end, I'm being told by liberals like, oh, Amir, the white man bad. You need to fear the white man. Black Lives Matter. Stick with the blacks. But if I'm looking at the hardcore experience, it's the black people making it difficult to even just exist. So again, another meme, but like the meme is like, oh, you're my real estate agent. But like, it's, again, it's relatable. It's honest. It's real. It's transparent. And people gravitate towards this because there's no sugarcoating. Like, there's no bullshit with it.
No, it's not the Jews. No, it's not women. No, it's not blacks. It's actually really complicated. No, it isn't at all. Jews are running society. Women need to shut the fuck up. Blacks need to be imprisoned for the most part. And we would live in paradise. It's that simple. It's literally that simple.
In this show, I talk a lot. Holy shit. That is my favorite clip I have ever seen of that man. That is my favorite clip. It is so funny. It is so funny. And that is one of the most famous clips that's ever went around. It's one of the most quotable ones that Nick has ever done. Because again, it's funny. Jews are running society. Women need to shut the fuck up. Blacks need to be in prison for the most part. And we will live in paradise.
Fuentes says that white people are justified in being racist.
The reason that we talk about this, by the way, I know a lot of black people see this and they go, man, why are you always talking about black people, this and that? Because there just needs to be some shame here. Well, there's a few reasons. First, white people are every single bit justified in being racist. Every single bit justified, to the extent that that means going out of your way to avoid black people when you see them.
It's funny, of all people, Ben to include that clip, because Ben talked about black people nonstop. Like, I've talked about my channel as a black person. I say the same thing. You look at any metric, they're justified to be like, what the hell is going on over there? Again, theme parks have changed their rules. Carnival Cruise, Targets, McDonald's, malls, water parks. So many just basic stuff have changed their rules because black people ruin it. So yeah. And then you look at, oh, damn, black men specifically, 16 to 30, y'all make up like 2%, 2-3% of the population, over like 50% of the murders and crimes.
You can call me a Nazi. You better be careful. Because if I'm a Nazi, then there's millions of young people that are following a Nazi. So you better be careful about those words.
He's not wrong. Like, you keep calling him a Nazi, calling him a white supremacist, calling him racist. You're just saying that for all of his base. It's the same with people who are like, oh, if you follow Trump, you support Trump, you're racist, bigoted, homophobic, sexist. You're only dividing up the base. You're only like, you're not just singling out that person, you're singling out that person and their millions of followers. So if you're gonna sit here and say, Nick is a Nazi, anybody who listens to him is a Nazi, do you know how many people listen to this man that actually aren't Nazis?
Tucker Carlson decided that it was important not only to host Fuentes, but to smooth over his views, water them down, and make them far more palatable to a normal audience, as we'll discuss in a bit.
Which is probably what people say about this video too, honestly. But you can't say those things about someone that's already popping and been popping for the past 10 years. This is just giving light and understanding to a man's head as to why so many men gravitate towards Nick and understand him.
This is what Tucker Carlson does for a living. But back to Nick Fuentes. To understand just what Tucker did here, we must actually examine what Nick Fuentes says on his show and has said for almost a decade, because he was asked precisely zero questions about any of what you're about to see by Tucker Carlson. Nick Fuentes says women want to be raped.
A lot of women want to be raped. And when I say raped, I mean like, that sounds bad when I say it like that. But there's like a lot of women that really want a guy to beat the shit out of them. But also, they have to pretend, but part of it is they have to pretend like they don't.
Listen, in the beginning, he even was like, that sounds a little crazy, but here's the context. One, we know he's joking, but two, we know that there's the meme and the joke within that. It goes back to when Trump was like, oh, we got to grab him by the blank. He's talking about the people that want to be grabbed. And I've seen countless reels from my homegirls on Instagram and on TikTok, all the videos of like, oh, my man uses his outdoor voice at me. It's like, oh, yell at me again. Oh, my man accidentally hits me. It's like, oh, okay. Like, it's a meme. We see it all the time. You look on in all them categories in, you know, the bad stuff. It's there. Like, women talk about, like, oh, the dungeons and 50 Shades of Grey. Like, they want some stuff. So, like, again, no one takes that and says, wow, he wants that for all women. No, obviously not.
Nick Fuentes says that his followers should kill, rape, and die in his name.
Raise your right hand. All right, everybody, raise your right hand. Raise your right hand. Repeat after me. I will kill, rape, and die for Nicholas J. Fuentes.
No one takes that seriously.
Nick Fuentes says that women are whores who shouldn't be in politics.
I will continue my crusade against women in politics. Because it's always like this, and it's so ironic. Women are like, I don't like, when you say, I like, you have to affect the face. When you say to repeal the 19th Amendment, that offends me. That hurts my feelings. It's like, have you ever stopped and considered that maybe if you get offended, there's such a strong emotional reaction to political opinions you disagree?
I've done polls like this on my Instagram story. The amount of women that are supporting me, this channel, support me, that think they shouldn't have the right to vote, or that think it was a bad idea, or that don't think women should be in politics, it's real. It exists. She's allowed to point that out.
You disagree with across the board. Maybe that's one of the reasons why you shouldn't be making political decisions. I'm not attacking women. I'm attacking whores. You have no problems, right? I'm attacking whores. I'm attacking sluts. Stupid, dirty bitches.
Nick Fuentes says that Jim Crow was actually better for black people.
It was better for them too, number one. But number two, who cares? Who cares? You know, enough with the Jim Crow stuff. Who cares? Oh, to drink out of a different water fountain. Big Oh no, they had to go to a different school. Their water fountain in that famous picture was worse. Who cares? Grow up. Drink out of the water fountain. It's water. It's the same. You know? And, you know, even if it was bad, who cares? Who cares? It's better. It's better in general. We all agree it was better for them. It's better for us. Better in general.
I just laugh at it. It's funny. Who cares? He's allowed to say these things.
I've got to confess that when I first heard some of Amir's selected clips by Fuentes, I found myself laughing out loud as well. To me, they were clearly comedy, even if reflecting the truth. And one issue I didn't expect to see raised was Fuentes' take on women, from the fact that many women like rough sex, a topic that we dove into during our July 16 broadcast on the erotic side of human sexuality, to the idea that women shouldn't be allowed to vote or get involved in politics. Earlier on, during the Jimmy Dore clip, his co-host Chris Keene commented that people get more upset by what people say than by what they do. And that got me to thinking, to the extent that this is so, why? I'm still working on a theory on this point, and I haven't really fully developed it yet. But it seems to me that what people do and what they've done, it's kind of the determined, it is the past. But what they say is often broadly interpreted as an intention describing what they will or will not do. Or, in the absence of this context, what people say is what identifies them as a friend or foe in the larger political polarity of left and right. Either way, talk is cheap, but effective under the right conditions. Finally, I have to confess, I have no clear solutions or remedies for resolving the fragmentation of the right, other than trying to separate personalities from ideas and ideologies. We've only managed to touch on a handful of personalities involved in this divide, and haven't even included the likes of Candace Owens, Alex Jones, Stu Peters, Laura Lynn Tyler Thompson, Stephen Crowder, Glenn Beck, Ezra Levant, Michael Knowles, Tim Pool, David Freiheit, Robert Barnes, Dave Rubin, Judge Napolitano, Dinesh D'Souza, Natalie and Clayton Morris, and a whole array of voices associated with the right who may not always agree with one another. All of these voices and others have at one time or another been featured on Just Right, and for our part, we will continue to feature the comments of anyone whose ideas deserve an airing, whether we view those ideas positively or negatively or a mix of both. And for the most part, and in most circumstances, I regard just about all of these people as being sincere and honorable in the sense that, even though I may consider some of them misguided, they're not really out to intentionally harm others. But again, you've got to admit that a lot of the personality conflicts are somewhat humorous and entertaining, even if slightly tragic on one level. But it is clear that a lot of the in-house fighting and bickering is all about distraction, distracting from the other person's priorities to one's own. So just make sure that all of these distracting narratives and events don't distract you from joining us again next week, when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
Everyone is talking today about the Third World War, which broke out this morning. But here on Nationwide, we're going to get away from that for a bit and look instead at the latest theory that sitting down regularly in a comfortable chair can rest your legs. It sounds very nice, doesn't it? But can it be done? Is it possible or practical for many of us in our jobs and with the sort of busy lives we lead to sit down in a comfortable chair just when we want? We sent our reporter, John Dull, to find out.
Well, here I am on London's busy Westminster Bridge, seeing just how much time sitting down can take. Well, I arrived here by train at about 8:50. It's now 9:05, so I've been here for approximately 12 minutes. And if it's any encouragement, I must say that my legs do feel rested.